Did I see Jackie Gerson?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good morning. I always feel guilty doing that, but anyway.
Rabbi, any news about Purim before you start?
Any news about Purim? Mm-hmm. All right, let's get started. Sorry, every time I do that, my computer temporarily freezes. So give me a minute and it'll unfreeze. I know you can probably still hear me, but I am computer frozen. Come on. Sorry about that. Hopefully it'll unfreeze, otherwise I'm gonna have to reboot, which will take me 5 minutes. Oh, come on. We may have to do this the old fashioned way. Open up a Tanakh. Wow.
We're so used to everything happening so quickly.
I know. And then, when you get too reliant on technology and technology fails,
right?
Then you're in trouble. Oh, there we go. We're getting somewhere. Now I got a big blank screen. You still there?
Yep, still there.
Now I got a big blank screen. That's so weird. Come on. Oh, there we go. Somehow, something's going fishy. Okay. We're back. Okay, sorry about that. That was a technical glitch, and I am not sure why. We are up to Perek Yud. I think we spent the last couple of weeks looking at Perek Tet, which is sort of this isolated story about Mephibosheth, somewhat isolated. It's there really to introduce Mephibosheth to us so that we know who he is when we get to the second part of the story of Avimelech. But for our purposes, we kind of did it as a standalone. And then we traced through the continuation of the story of Avimelech, of Mephibosheth, through the rest of Shmuel Bet. And we're going back now. I promised you that when we did Perek Yud, we'd also go back and relearn Perek Chet, because Perek Chet we kind of ran through. Perek Chet is a table of contents to all the different battles that David fights. Battle of Moab, Battle of Ammon, Battle of Aram, or Dadezer. And so it's hard to learn it in a vacuum by itself because so many of the details are omitted there. But they're the same battles that appear in Perek Yud. They're just kind of a summary in Perek Chet. Kind of give you a quick glance. Perek Chet began, Vayich Rechen Vayach David Taplishtim. So lists the war with the Plishtim, Vayachet Moav, battle with Moav, which is a very strange battle, and we'll touch on it briefly, and then we'll explore it in more detail a little bit down the line. But Vayachet Moav, Vayimadadem, Vachevel, measured them with a line or a rope, Hashkevotam Arza, made them lie down on the ground, two lines to put to death, one line to keep alive, two-thirds he killed, one-third he kept alive. Moabites became servants to David. It's unclear exactly what's driving David in this war with Moab. It sounds like, on the face of it, a very cruel battle with Moab, somewhat uncharacteristic for David. We will explore it what's driving it, the motivation behind it. Is there a story? Suddenly he goes and he smites, after he finishes the plishtim, he smites Moav. Moav needs to be explored. ויחד דוד את הדד עזר בין רחוב מלך צובה בלחתו להשיב ידו בנה הפרט. And the next battle listed there is דד עזר or Aram, which is all the way up in the north. And major battle described here in three psukim. Unclear that this is what's going on. What more likely, and I think this is sort of understood, that this battle with Aram and the various forces of the armies of Mesopotamia is really a much later battle. Aram Damesek, Aram Tsova is really a later battle that takes place in Perek Yud. Perek Chet is sort of a list, almost like a table of contents of all the different battles that David fought, and ends with a kind of summary, Vayimloch David al Kol Yisrael, kind of a summary of David's kingdom, of David's reign. And that's, I think, exactly what that parak is. It's a list of all of his campaigns. Plishtim, Moav, Aram, which we'll see in a moment, Edom, Vayas be'Edom Tzivim, and then Vayimloch David al Kol Yisrael. So by the time he finishes, Plishtim in the southeast, southwest, Ammon and Moav in the east, Aram in the north, David has expanded the boundaries of Israel into a very large map. Actually, I want to just pull up that map for you. So give me a second. This is a map. I don't think I showed you this map last time, but this is a map of all the battles that these parakim describe. So here is the battle with the Plishtim. Here is Yerushalayim. Here's the battle with the Plishtim. Here is the battle of Moav. So Moav is in the south. Edom is in further south. Ammon is here in the east. And then from the battle with Ammon, this is all Perek Yud. We'll see this in a little while. He moves up north into the battle of Aram, Aram Damesek, Aram Tsova, and then all the way up into the reaches of the of Iraq and the Tigris and the Euphrates. So you can see, if you take all of this gray and you add it to the boundaries of the land of Israel, you can kind of get a sense of what's going on. This purple is what the kingdom looked like in the days of Shaul. This gray is what the kingdom looks like by the time David is finished. So you realize how extraordinary and how much larger the somebody asked me, is Philistia is today's Gaza, more or less. You can sort of see the cities. Gaza's down here. So today is the Gaza Strip, is a little bit further south. Eretz Plishtim goes from Gat, is the main city of Eretz Plishtim, is a little bit further north. But be that as it may, this gives you a sense of the depth and breadth of David's campaign. And that's more or less what I think is being...
Did you live in all those places, all those great places?
Say that again?
Did Jews live in all those great places after
David? I doubt it. There might have been in some areas, but for the most part, it was just a sort of a regional conquest. For various reasons, which we'll see when we get to Perek Yud, exactly what happened in this story. So this is where Perek Chet kind of summarizes all of these campaigns. Why it's written that way, we'll look at. But for now, I'm going to leave Perek Chet, and we are going to shift our attention to Perek Yud. So we're now looking at Shmuel Bet Perek Yud. After these things, after which things? Yamot Melech Bnei Ammon, the king of Ammon died. Vayimloch Chanun Bino Tachtav. Hanun, his son, took over. Who is the king of Ammon, and what is after these things? So after these things typically is after the previous parak. The previous parak is the story of Mephibosheth. So previous parak was David was owing a debt of chesed to Yonatan, which he fulfilled through Yonatan's son. Parak Yud, we're dealing with the battle of, with the story of the son of the king of Ammon, Hanun ben blank. Who is his father? Who is the story? So let's go one more pasuk. Vayomer David, Esech chesed im Hanun ben Nachash. I'm going to show kindness, chesed, to this Hanun ben Nachash. Kasher asa aviv yimadi chesed, as his father Nachash had shown me chesed, shown me kindness. I owe him a debt. Vayishlach David l'nachamo b'yad avadav al aviv. So David sent a mishlachat, a delegation of people to be menachem avel, to go and express comfort to him, to pay him a visit. Nicham aveilim. Vayivo avdei David eretz b'nei Ammon. And so his delegation come to the land of Ammon to pay a visit, to comfort the son after his father died. The son's name is Hanun. Father's name is Nachash, king of Bnei Ammon. Now this Nachash Melech Bnei Ammon is somebody we are aware of. We have encountered him before. Anybody remember where? Now I'm testing you.
I'm sure it's one of those times David was chased by Sheol or something.
Well, so that's the mystery, is we don't have a reference to any encounter between Nachash and David. One of the questions the Mefarshim struggle with, and the Medrash is, you know, it's sort of perfect fertile ground for the Medrash to jump in and fill in the details, is we have no previous encounter between David and Nachash Melech Bnei Ammon. So we don't actually know when Nachash expressed chesed to David or did an act of kindness to David, and thereby why David felt beholden to repay that kindness by paying a visit to Hanun ben Nachash. We simply don't know. And the Medrash will pick up into that gap and fill in the details. We'll see how this delegation ended up in a moment. What we do know is that Nachash has been the king of Ammon for a long time.
Is there any significance to his name? Isn't Nachash a snake?
Yeah, I mean, if you put these into Hebrew words, and Hanun means kindness, which is certainly not anything related to his name, I doubt it. I think that's just sort of language play between Hebrew and Semitic languages of the Far East. I don't know exactly in what language of Ammon these words are and what they mean. I doubt it derives from the Hebrew. Neither Hanun nor Nachash, I think, would be an appropriate name for them in that regard. But we have encountered this Nachash Melech ben Ammon before. Anybody remember where? That's already a little bit trickier. Anybody remember where we came across Nachash Melech Bnei Ammon? We're going to go all the way back to Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph. Now, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph is the beginning of Shaul's reign. So we're talking about at least 40 plus, maybe 50 plus years earlier. Maybe even more. Because Shaul reigned for, we don't know how many years Shaul reigned for. So it's unclear, but certainly was a significant period of time. Vayal Nachash Ha'amoni, this Nachash Ha'amoni came Vayichan al Yavesh Gilad, and he attacked the city of Yavesh Gilad. This is before Shaul was anointed, but he hadn't yet emerged as king. Vayomru kol anshei Yavesh al Nachash kuat lanu brit v'na'avdeka. The people of Yavesh Gilad, were willing to surrender, and they turned to Nachash, king of Ammon, and they said, state your terms. Well, let's make a brit, let's make a covenant. We'll serve you, we'll pay homage, we'll pay taxes. Vayomer alehem Nachash Ammoni said, bezot echot lachem, I will be happy to make this brit on the following condition. Binkor lachem kol ayin yamin, that you all gouge out and send me your right eye. V'samtiach cherpa al kol Yisrael, and I will lay it as a reproach for all of Israel. V'yomru elav ziknei Yavesh, the elders of Yavesh, said to Nachash, king of Ammon, heref lanu shivat yamim, v'nishlecha malachim b'chol gvu Yisrael, v'im en moshiyotana v'yatzanu le'elecha. Give us 7 days to kind of figure out. We'll send messengers to all of Israel. We'll see if we find anybody who's willing to come and fight you and kill you. And if not, then we'll come out to you, either to surrender or to fight you ourselves. I don't think they actually told that to Yavesh. I think they kind of told Yavesh no, and then kind of in their minds, that's what they were considering. And of course, Vayavo Malachim Givat Shaul, so the messengers from Yavesh come to Givat Shaul, Vayadbu Advarim Bozne Ha'am, they tell the people, Vayisu Kol Amet Kolam Vayivku. The people all turned, lifted up the voices and cried. Why did they cry?
They didn't want to go blind.
So it's the people of, it's not the people of Yavesh Gilad who cried, it's the people of Givat Shaul who cried.
Oh.
Vayisu Kol Ha'am Et Kolam Vayivku. Why were the people of Givat Shaul crying?
Because Shaul is going to go fight for them?
Shaul's not here yet. Shaul hasn't arrived yet. Why are they all crying?
Maybe they're next. They thought they were next.
Okay, that would be kind. That would be a kind way of looking at it. I wasn't thinking so kindly. I was thinking that the reaction was one of sympathy. Poor Yavesh Gilad, they're all going to lose their right eye. Nebuch, what a terrible situation, what a terrible tragedy. You people of Yavesh Gilad, just understand the border, the map for a minute. If I go back to this map here, this is the Gilad, Evra Hayarden. This is Ammon. Yavesh Gilad is more or less here along the near Machanayim, here in the middle of the Gilad. So we're talking about a city that belongs to Shevet Reuven or Shevet. Might actually be Benasha, but it's here. Here's Ramot Gilad. Here in this area is Yavesh Gilad. And Ammon attacks. Now, if you understand that if Ammon is attacking, that the incursion, they're heading westward into the land of Israel, right? They're moving, trying to enter. So they are the border city. The Yavesh Gilad is kind of the protection, the border city around of the tribes of Israel. And so they send a delegation to Givat Shaul to say to them, hey, we're being attacked by Ammon. His price for surrender or negotiation is our right eye. And the people of Givat Shaul respond and say, okay, Nebuch, you're all going to lose your right eye because we're not going to do anything about it. Right? We're not going to come and fight. And then suddenly Shaul shows up. Why are the people crying? So they explain to Shaul the message from Yavesh Gilad. And Shaul says, you know, rather than cry, why don't we do something about it? And so he gathers his forces and he goes, and he attacks Nachash Melech Ben Ammon, wipes out the army, and eventually frees the people of Yavesh Gilad. And that's the beginning of the relationship between Shaul and Yavesh Gilad, which is why eventually the people of Yavesh Gilad risked their lives, if you remember, years later, when Shaul died and his body was taken to Gaza, to Gat, the people of Yavesh Gilad were the ones who went and risked their lives to go and save the body, the body of Shaul, and give him proper burial. So that's the story of Yavesh Gilad. And it's the first time we meet, in this context, this individual by the name of Nachash, king of Ammon. On the scale of kind to cruel, 1 to 5, I would put Nachash Melech ben Ammon under the category of a 7 or an 8. This is not the kind, kind, nice, sort of benevolent kind of leader. This is a guy who, and he says, okay, state your terms for surrender. And he says, well, my terms are you all gouge out your right eye and then we can talk. So into that story, David, we encounter, let's go back to David. This Nachash, king of Ammon, dies. And his son Hanun takes over. Vayomer David, eseh chesed im Hanun ben Nachash, kasher asa aviv imadi chesed. This Nachash, Melech Ammon, had done some kindness for David, and David felt a need, an obligation to repay that kindness and send a delegation of comfort and nicham aveilim to Hanun ben Nachash. So we have two mysteries here. We don't know what kindness Nachash paid to David. There is no encounter whatsoever between Nachash and David up to this point. And why?
Rabbi, you don't think this is said with irony, maybe?
No, I don't think it's with irony. I think he means it. Unfortunately, it's met with tragedy. But I don't think it's meant with irony at all. And I would say that for two reasons. Number one, because I think that David's reaction is such that he's truly surprised and angered by the cruelty with which the Ammonites greet David's delegation, number one. And number two, and this is no less significant, the parallel between this perek is the previous perek. Vayich Rechain links this perek to perek Tet. And what happened in perek Tet was structurally exactly the same scenario. David owed a debt of gratitude and chesed to Yonatan, the father's generation. And so he bestows that kindness on Mephibosheth, the son, as a kind of way of paying his debt to the father. You have exactly the same structure here. David owes an act of chesed, of kindness, to Nachash, father generation, and so he decides to bestow it upon his son, Hanun, the second generation. So the structure here is identical to the structure of Perek Tet, which may also account for why these two prakim are side by side. I'm going to read the rest of the story just because I want us to see what happened. And then I'm going to come back to this because this is really the focus. The focus for today is on this story of Hanun and Nachash. But I want to just, so we have a sense of it, to understand the tragedy of what took place. Phyllis, you had a question?
Yeah. Could it be a different Nachash? Like Paro is the king of Egypt and different kings took that name?
Yes, it is possible.
That's not what Chazal teaches?
No, so that's not going to, that doesn't appear in Chazal. It is entirely conceivable. The time frame, however, is not so far off. Remember, Shaul's reign is what, 10 years, 20 years? We're not clear exactly how many years Shaul reigned. Yavesh Gilad with Nachash is the beginning of Shaul. This is David sort of midway. It's not inconceivable that this could be the same Nachash. It's possible, but Nachash has two sons that are mentioned in Sefer Shmuel. One is here by the name of Hanun. The other appears a little bit later in the story. I might as well show you that one now. Do you remember our discussion of, in the discussion of Mephibosheth, one of the stories we encountered was as David was leaving Yerushalayim and who was sided with him, who assisted him, who came to his aid, etc. So in that context, we find the following sequence of events in Perek Yud Zayin. As David is leaving Yerushalayim, running away from Avshalom, David took all his people and he crossed over the Yarden. He took everybody with him. His old story of Achitofel will leave. Comes to Machanaim. Where is Machanaim? So Machanaim is here. Machanaim is right. This Yabok River is Machanaim, famous. Yaakov stopped in Machanaim, famous story. And in that context, that Amasa Samar Shalom Tachad Yoav, Amasa was in charge of the army. Who is he greeted by when it comes to Machanaim? So just understand the geography. It's important. Machanaim is here. So David is leaving from Yerushalayim and he's running. He crosses across the Yarden. This is after the rebellion of Avshalom. And he heads north. Maybe he crosses here. And he heads along the Yabok River. He comes to the city of Machanaim. We're not far from the capital of Ammon, right? Rabbah is the capital of the city of Ammon. It's often referred to as Rabat B'nai Ammon. Today it's referred to as the city of Amman.
In Jordan.
Right, in Jordan. Correct. Comes from the same etymology. Ammon, Amman, Rabbah. So he comes to the city, he comes to Machanaim. Vishovi ben Nachash mirabat ben Amon umachir ben Amiel milo davar ubarzilaya giladi miroglim. Three people come to greet him and to join forces with him. They are Shovi ben Nachash from Rabat ben Amon, Machir ben Amiel from milo davar. Who is Machir ben Amiel? Anybody remember? Achir ben Amiel was the individual who had adopted and in whose house Mephibosheth was growing up before he Mephibosheth was brought to Yerushalayim. So he was living by Machir ben Amiel Milo Davar and by Zilai Giladi from somewhere in the from Roglim. And they brought Mishka, Visapot, Kleotzer, beds and basins and earthen vessels, Vichitim, Usari, Mekemach, Vikali, Ufal, Vadashim, Vikali. They brought all kinds of corn and beans and lentils and parched, right? They brought food. Dvash, Chema, Tson, Shvot, Bakar. They brought sheep and curd and they brought all this for David, and for all the people to eat. Because they said they're hungry, they're thirsty. Exactly what the Torah tells us about Ammon and Moab that they didn't do when we left Mitzrayim. Here comes Shovi ben Nachash from Ramat ben Amon, together with Machir ben Amiel and Barzillai Giladi, and they bring David all of the provisions he needs for his army. So this Shovi ben Nachash is an interesting person because he's also from Ramat ben Amon. It's the same time period. And if I look at it from that perspective, then I now have a family tree. I now know who this household is. Nachash was the king of Ammon, right? Here is Ammon. Here's the capital. Nachash was the king of Ammon. Evidently, he had two children. He had Hanun, who became the new king after Nachash died. And he has another son by the name of Shovi. So there's two sons of Nachash, Hanun ben Nachash and Shovi ben Nachash. Shovi ben Nachash was very kind. Shovi ben Nachash stood with David as an ally when David was fleeing from Yerushalayim. Shovi ben Nachash does exactly what David had expected Hanun ben Nachash to do, to repay kindness with kindness. Evidently, there had been some kind of positive relationship between David and Nachash Melech ben Amon. And David was hoping that that positive relationship, whatever it was, would transfer to the children.
Rabbi.
So he sends a delegation to express condolences, official condolences on behalf of the king of Israel to the new king of Ammon by the name of Hanun ben Nachash. Unfortunately, that did not turn out that way. Abigail ben Nachash. Where is Abigail ben Nachash? Yeah, I don't think that's the same context. It's a different lineage altogether. But nonetheless, this Shovi ben Achash is certainly Hanun's brother. And we end up with a very odd scenario where David is expecting, you know, you repay this kindness to Nachash, Melech ben Ammon, of which we know nothing. So we don't know about this, what this kindness is based on. And Hanun, of course, will not respond to it as kindly as David hopes. And Shovi is sitting off in the sides. We don't know anything about him except that he did not become king. And he evidently sides with David. So would to be a fly on the table at the family lunch between Hanun and Shovi at a family gathering or picnic. Vayomru Sarei b'nei Ammon. All right, back to our story. David sends his delegation to Hanun ben Nachash. Vayomru Sarei b'nei Ammon el Hanun Adonehem. The princes of the children of Ammon turned to their king, and they said, Ha-mechabed David et Avicha b'einecha? You think that David is coming to honor your father? And he sent you comforters? Hello, Bavur Chakorata Ir, Ulidagla, Ulofcha, Shalach David et Avadavelacha. You misread David. David hasn't sent you a delegation to be Menachem Avos, says the ministers to Hanun. He's come to spy on the city. He's come to seek out the weaknesses of the city, to overturn it, to overcome, to conquer it. David is sent a delegation to spy out the land. By the way, this should ring familiar. Why? It should sound familiar. Have we ever encountered a situation before where somebody sent a peace delegation and somebody else accused that peace delegation of being being a spy?
I think it happened all the time, no? Was Sodom a place like that?
It might have happened all the time, but it doesn't happen all the time in Tanakh. It happens one place in Tanakh. Shmuel Bet Perek Dalet. No, actually... No, it's actually Perek Gimel.
Mother pushed him.
No, it's actually Perek Gimel. Meishlach Avner Malachim El David Tachtav Lemor. Lemi Eretz, Lemor, Karta Britcha Iti Vine Yadi Mach Laseh Velach Et Kol Yisrael. Avner Bener, in his disillusion with Ishbosheth, sends a delegation to David saying, you are the true king. Meet with me, and I will bring you the rest of the tribes. Vayomer David responds, Tov, ani achlot yitcha brit. I'll be happy to make a brit with you, provided you bring me back Michal. And that's exactly what they do. And Avner comes to meet with the Ziknei Yisrael, and he tells them a whole story about how David is really the true king, and he's happy to bring over all the tribes of Israel. Fine. Avner goes his way. And in walks Yoav, his general. And Yoav is told that Avner ben Ner who was the general for Ishbosheth, for Shaul and then for Ishbosheth, had come to visit David, and that David had let him go peacefully. Yoav comes to the king and he says, what have you done? Hine Bavner Elecha, Avner was in your grasp. You had him here. Why did you let him go? Yadata et Avner b'ner ki lefatotcha ba. Uledat et motzacha b'et movoacha uledat kol asher ata oseh. He hasn't come as a delegation for peace. He's come as a spy. He's come to know your dealings and you're going out and you're coming in. He's coming so you'll show him all your military plans and your city, etc. Yoav turns, goes, and he devises a ruse to bring Avner back, and then he kills Avner privately in a one-on-one. David's response, he was silenced. David did not respond to Yoav's accusation that Avner had come not in peace, but as a spy. There are some who want to suggest that ultimately David paid the price for that silence, and that price is here. But that's exactly the story here. David sends a delegation to Hanun ben Nachash, and the Sarei ben Amon say to Hanun, David is not coming to offer you condolences. He's coming to enter into your palace so that he can spy out the city and so that he can discover the weaknesses of the city. So Hanun took David's servants, and he shaved half their beards as an expression of shame. He shamed them publicly by shaving half their beards. Exactly how that works is cultural, but nonetheless. And he cut their garments down in half to sort of remove their pants. And he left them and he sent them on their way. He publicly humiliated. David heard, he sent sent for them because they were ashamed they couldn't return to Yerushalayim. So he must have sent them a uniform or clothes, and then he said, you stay in Yerushalayim in Yericho until your beards grow back, because they could not be seen in Israel without their beards. When the children of Ammon saw that that they had become odious in the eyes of David, well, no surprise, right? They just publicly humiliated David's delegation. How do you think David's going to respond? David heard and he responded by sending out the army, right? This is a declaration of war. You don't take a delegation of peace of ambassadors and publicly humiliate them like this, and then expect that not to be interpreted as a declaration of war. And that's how the war with Ammon begins. So this whole story is very tragic, because on the one hand, David is trying to reach out to Hanun and repay kindness with kindness. And it ends in tragedy upon tragedy. Right? It ends with an extraordinary, for David, it ends in a major battle that ultimately leads to the conquest of the entire region, but it'll take us time till we get there. So that's the background, that's the story. And I wanna for the remaining time that we have, look at David's expression of kindness. What is this kindness that Hanun, that Nachash had performed for David that we don't know about because it's not in Tanakh, that David responds to in kind and ultimately is repaid in such a harsh way? So as is classic, whenever you have a story in Tanakh that is referenced, but we have no details on, meaning there's a reference here to something, but we have no information about it. As Chesed im Hanun, Kaasher asa avivi madi chesed, right? David says, I want to do an act of chesed to Hanun because his father was kind to me. When was Nachash, this cruel king of Ammon, ever kind to David? So this kind of absence, reference to stories that don't appear in Tanakh, is a classic material for the Midrash to do what we call milui pa'arim, or to fill in the blank, fill in the space, right? Fill in the reference. What exactly are we talking about? So let's take a look at the Midrash and how the Midrash addresses this question. Pasuk happens to be, this Midrash happens to be on a Pasuk in Tehillim. Mo'av sir rachatzi. Mo'av is like a pot of boiling water, a wash basin. Why in this parak? This parak happens to be a parak that deals with the whole parak, right? This parak of Tehillim is a psalm that refers to the events of our parak, a parak Yud. I'll show you very briefly. Lamnatzeach michtam David bahatzoto et aram naharaim ve'et aram tzova vayashov Yoav vayachet Edom begemelach 12,000. And this is the exact context of our story, where David fought against Aram Naharaim and Aram Tzova, and he smote Ammon and Moab. He smote Edom. Later on, there's a reference to Ammon and Moab. Li Gilad, Li Menashe, Moav Sir Achatzi, Moav is my washpot, Edom, Mashlich Na'ali, etc. So this whole parak deals with, we're not going to read it now, we'll come back to it at a later time, but this parak deals with our parak, our story of the battles of Aram Naharaim. And so on that parak, or on that pasuk, is the reference of Tehillim, Moav Sir Achatzi. So the Medrash says the following. לפי שבשעה שברח דוד מפני שאול, הוליך אביו ואמו אל מלך מואב. Says the Medrash, let's go back, turn the clock back to when David was running from Shaul. And he took his father and his mother and his family, and he left them in a place of security with the king of Moab. He was afraid of Shaul. He was afraid that Shaul would kill them. Shaul was killing anybody who had anything to do with David. And what did he do with the city of Nov? For the one moment, right, it was just a quick review of the events of the end of Shmuel Aleph. For that one moment that that David had escaped and gone to the city of Nov, Shaul went and he executed, literally killed all the people of Nov and burnt the Mishkan for having given succor and food to and a weapon to David to defend himself with. So immediately, Vayelech David Misham, Vayimalet Ma'arat Adulam. So immediately David went and he hid. And so his brothers and his father's house heard what was going on, and they came to David there because David knew in Beit Lechem they would be David Shaul would walk into Beit Lechem and kill them all. And there he gathered around also a group of Aram Yotish, his 400 men. We've talked about that. We're going to skip there for now. Vayelech David misham mitzpe Moav. David took his family from there and he went to Mitzpeh Moav. Vayomer el melech Moav. He said to the king of Moav, Yetzena avivi imi itchem. Let my father and my mother stay here with you. Ad asher eda mayaseh li elokim. Till I know what God will do for me. I have no idea what my future holds. I do know that my family is not safe under the thumb of Shaul. Especially the previous parak is the destruction of Nov. And David blamed himself for the fall of Nov. David always blamed himself for the execution of the city of Nov because he knew that Shaul had gone there because he had sought refuge there. Vayanchem et pnei melech Moav. So he brought them to the king of Moav. Vayeshvuimo. And there his family dwelt kol yemei hayot David b'mtzudah, all the days that David was in the stronghold. And irony is that is the last we ever hear about David's family. there's no reference anywhere subsequent to this event of David having come back to collect them or what happened to them. We simply have no information of what happened to David's family in Moab. Now, why would you take your family to Moab? A foreign nation, foreign kings. We know how Nachash, king of Ammon, which, and Ammon and Moab are cousins, and Ammon and Moab are not known for their hospitality, especially in the context of the continuation of the culture of Sodom. They're not necessarily known for their kindness to guests.
David might have had still family there through Ruth.
Maybe. Maybe that's what he was hoping. I don't know. That sounds to me a stretch. But David took on a Moab because of their fourth cousins, especially considering the understanding of what they did to his family. It's possible. Maybe that's what he was expecting. And if that is so, he was unfortunately very naive, because in the absence of any information other than the cruelty with which David responds to Moab when he starts his campaign against Moab, Chazal say that the king of Moab, immediately after David left, the king of Moab went and executed the entire family. I suspect he took them there because when David was running away from Shaul, where did he run to? Ironically,
Moab.
You know, David runs to Moab, and he runs to where?
The Philistines.
He runs to the Philistines. Philistine. Ironically, the Philistines are his arch enemies. Why would David run to Eretz Philistim? Why does he seek refuge by Achish Melech Gat from Eretz Philistim? Because if you're labeled an enemy of the state, and you are a refugee, and you are running from the king, where is the last place the king's reach is going to get you?
Their main enemy.
In your enemies. So David has no choice. And he runs to Shaul's enemies. That's exactly what he does. He runs to Shaul's enemies. And he hides in Eretz Plishtim. And he hides his family in Eretz Moab, which is also one of the enemies of Israel. Meaning he's seeking safe harbor for his family, he's going to place them out of the reach of Shaul Melech Yisrael, which means, unfortunately, into the hands of his enemies. He has no choice but to trust that they will be safe there. Unfortunately, in David's case, or for his family, I think Medrash certainly says that they were not safe there, and that ultimately the king of Moab kills them all. And that's exactly this Medrash that we started. David was running from Shaul. He took his father and his mother and his family to the king of Moab. He was afraid of Shaul. Says Phyllis and the Medrash, he thought that he had distant cousins there, that they'd be safe. That's the pasuk I just read with you. That's why this pasuk calls Moab a washpot. Because in a pot on the stove, the meat kind of shrinks. So too, all of the family were killed by the king of Moab. Nobody survived. Except Ella, Ach Echad. Says the Medrash, one brother survived. We don't know any information about this. This is not in the text. This is a conjecture of the Medrash. But the Medrash says one brother survived. There was one survivor of the family who ran. Ach le David. Shebarach, and where did he run to? Barach, Etzel Nachash, Melech Bnei Ammon. He ran to Nachash, king of Ammon. Ammon and Moab are cousins. Ammon and Moab are neighbors. Here's Moab in the south. Here's Ammon in the north. In the east, I mean. So he ran to Ammon. V'shalach melech Moab acharav. And so the king of Moab sent a messenger to extradite that last remaining relative of David back to Moab. And Nachash refused. And he protected his brother. Says the Medrash, for who a chesed shasa Nachashim David. And that's the chesed that Nachash had done, sparing the brother of David from the wrath of the king of Moab. Ulefichach nitgare Moabim. And that, says the Medrash, is why David, when he fought against the Moabites in Perek Chet, that I showed you at the beginning of this year, that's why David was so cruel to them. He smote Moab, and he smote Moab, this whole exercise with 2/3 of them to be killed with the rope, etc., all as an act of vengeance by David against the people of Moab in anger for how the king of Moab treated his family. That is the midrashic picture of the story of the kindness that Nachash performed for David, in contrast to the cruelty of Moab. So the Medrash takes two mysteries and links them together. On the one hand, I have a mystery of why David is so cruel to Moab in Perek Chet. And the other, literally a Perek later, or two Perekim later, I have a reference to how kind Nachash was to David and how David wanted to repay that kindness. So I have the cruelty to Moab and the kindness to Ammon. There's a mystery here. So the Medrash says, must be that these two stories are interconnected. When maybe at the very same time that Moab was cruel to David and his family, Nachash, king of Ammon, was bestowed some kindness upon David and protected the last remaining brother. And so David wanted to repay that kindness with kindness. Unfortunately, was not the case. That is the midrashic picture. The problem, of course, with these midrashim is they're an attempt to explain a piece of the text that's mysterious. What kindness did Nachash do to David, combined with the cruelty that David performed for Moab, Yachad Moab Yemadadem Bechevel, two Prakim earlier, to take these two pieces, these two mysterious pieces, and explain it with a midrashic story that doesn't exist in the text, but at least gives us a context, an ukimta, as we say, right, a context that would explain the behavior. Obviously, I think from a pshat perspective, it is problematic because we're adding into the story information that's not there. So that leaves us with two big questions. Number one, I have a difficulty seeing David. Go back to Perek Chet. I have a great difficulty seeing David in the context of his treatment of Moab, acting as a kind of personal vengeance against Moab for the cruelty with which they treated his family. I don't see David at this point in his life acting out of such personal motivation in so publicly a cruel fashion. So that's one part of the problem. And the other is that this reference to the chesed of Nachash Melech Bnei Ammon. We have no way, I would imagine it should be something, we should be referenced to it, there should be some reference, some indication of what's going on. So what do I do with this? What do we do with this? The truth is that I don't really have anything earth-shattering here to do with this, except to suggest that there were many places that David went in his long journey, in his flight from Sha'ul, that took him into areas that he felt would be safe from the wrath and from the hand of Sha'ul. So we know he went to Gat. We know he went to Eretz Plishtim. We know he went to Moab. It's entirely possible that in that arc, in an attempt to flee the hands of Sha'ul, the reach of Sha'ul, he went to Gat, he went to Moab, not a stretch to assume that at some point or another he ended up in Ammon. He ended up in Ammon. And there, again, who was David at that time? Let's put it in this perspective. Who was David at that time? And he wasn't king. Who was he?
A fugitive.
A ragtag army with him, that's all.
But he was a rebel.
Right.
He was a rebel. He had put together his own army, a clandestine army, illegal army. He was a rebel against the king. Now, he himself would never treat the king ill, like that. We saw that several times in Shmuel Aleph. But from the eyes of the people, and certainly in the eyes of Shaul, David was a traitor, and David was labeled as such, and he has his own army, own mercenary army. Not a stretch. If you're looking at it from the outside and you don't have the internet and you don't have media, and even if you did, I'm not so necessarily sure you believe it any more than the circumstances that are before you, right? What are you assuming? You're assuming that David is turned against Shaul and that David is an enemy of Shaul and that, well, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So is it any surprise?
How long a period is this?
So it's all those years.
What are we talking about?
It's all those early years of David when he was running from Shaul before he became king. We don't know. But it's all the years of Shaul's reign that David was on the run. It's certainly a good number of years, 10, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10. We don't know. We don't have any frame of reference. But it's not a stretch to assume Shaul reigned, 20 years maybe? So during a good part of them, David was on the run. He certainly ran to Eretz Plishtim. We know that. We know that he spent a great deal of time in Eretz Plishtim. He settled in the city of Tziklag. He presented himself to the Plishtim as an enemy of Shaul. He went and he raided the southern tribes of the Amalek and Midian, etc., but claimed that he was raiding Judean Israelite settlements. Remember that story? And he was claiming that he was killing Jews and bringing Achish, Melech Gath, their spoils, even though he was really attacking Amalek and Midianites. But his claim was that he was an enemy of Shaul. It's not a stretch to assume that during that time when he was running and he was seeking safe harbor somewhere to remain out of sight, he went to Moab, could have easily gone to Ammon as well. And it's possible that where Moab responded in cruelty, King of Ammon responded in kindness. It is entirely possible. Because Achish Melech Gath responded in kindness, he wanted to believe David. In fact, he did in this second visit. He did believe David. And so I assume that Nachash, king of Ammon, also believed David. Why wouldn't he believe David? David is running from Shaul. Shaul is trying to kill him. That's public. Why wouldn't he believe that David is a refugee, that David is turned, that David is an enemy of the state? And therefore, since Shaul is Nachash's enemy, and Shaul has been Nachash's enemy since when? When did Shaul become Nachash, king of Ammon's enemy?
When he wanted to gouge out the people's eyes.
Right, the first story that we read today. Yeah. The very beginning of Shaul, Shaul's very first battle was against Nachash Melech Ammon. So here's David, an enemy of Shaul, seeks refuge in the hands of Nachash. I'm assuming that Nachash embraced him. Is that story in Tanakh? No. But not every story is in Tanakh. David spent years running throughout this region, here in the south and on the Ark, from Ammon, Moab, the southern tribe of Judah, and into Eretz Plishtim, to stay away from the hands of Shaul. This was the arc of his journeys. I'm going to take an assumption that I think is a reasonable one, that during that time, Nachash protected David. Whether he protected him actively, protected him passively, he protected David. And so when Nachash dies, and now David is king, David decides to repay kindness with kindness. Unfortunately, his kindness is misplaced. And his kindness is misplaced simply because, amongst many reasons, his kindness is misplaced because David forgot a fundamental principle. And the fundamental principle is a pasuk in the Torah. Le'avo amoni u'moavi b'kal Hashem. You shall not allow Ammon or Moab to enter into the congregation of God. Gam do asiri le'avo lehem b'kal Hashem adolam, even up to 10 generations. Leaving out the whole issue about women and women converts and Ruth, whole different discussion. We talked about that when we did Megillat Ruth. But certainly Ammon and Moab, nothing doing. Why? Because they were inhospitable, because they did not greet you with bread and water when you left Egypt. We would expect that of them. They're cousins. Nonetheless, they treated you as strangers. Their behavior was Sodom-like, to review much of what we have already addressed. And they tried to kill you, which is no surprise, right? Not only were they not kind to you, they also tried to kill you, which is something to remember. And lo avah Hashem lekecha lishmael Bilam, God did not let Bilam's curse work. In fact, he turned it into a blessing. Therefore, bottom line, Pasuk Zayin, lo tidrosh shlomam v'tovatam kol yemecha l'olam. Do not seek their peace or their prosperity for eternity. Ammon and Moab are not to be trusted. Bottom line, Pasuk in the Torah, Ammon and Moab are not to be trusted. Lot yidrosh lamam b'tavatam. Generality, generalization, sweeping with the mall, painting them all with one brush, yes. Reality, okay. But that's what the Torah says it. Do not trust them. Do not seek their peace nor their prosperity for eternity. What does David do? He trusts them. And in so doing, he thinks he is an ally. Kasher asa avivi madi chesed. Maybe his son will have seen his father's kindness and maybe we can begin to develop a relationship. I'm the new king of Israel. I'll send a delegation. Maybe we can build a rapport. Maybe we can have a peace treaty. Maybe we can start, right? That's how alliances are built. Kindness repays kindness. Result? Speaks for itself. And that's exactly what Chazal say. Lo tidrosh shlomam b'tovatam. Ata motzeh b'mi shebayim mahem b'midat rachamim. If you engage Ammon and Moab in mercy, l'sof ba'lidei b'zion milchamot v'tzavor. In the end, you're going to come to disgrace, war, and distress. Who forgot this? David. Ve'eze ze David. Ve'yomer David eseh chesed im chanun menachash. David said, let me repay chanun and menachash. Let me do kindness to chanun. Amon lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Atat avor al dvarai? David, are you going to... Sorry. I just got something caught in my throat. Are you going to transgress my words? Ani katavti, I, says God to David, wrote in the Torah, lo tidrosh lomam b'tovatam. Ata say, ma'am, gimul chesed. David, al titzatikabei. Pasuk in Kohelet, don't be so righteous. Shalei adam mevater al ha-Torah. B'ze shalech l'nachem b'nei Ammon l'asot imam chesed. You know what the end result is going to be? Sof balidei b'zayon. In the end, it will come to disgrace. As it says, Chanun and Avdei David took David and he shaved them and he removed their clothing and he sent them on their way. And therefore, the result is going to be a response. Ubalidei Mulchama, in the end, is going to become to war. and war with Aram Naharaim, Malchei Tzova, Malchei Ma'achav, Bnei Ammon. This war expands. It starts with Ammon and then expands into Aram because Aram calls Aram as allies to come and help defend them. And then it grows and it grows and it grows and until ultimately Vayar Yoav Ketai Lapnei Mechama. Yoav thinks the war is going to destroy them. We'll see that this is a desperate hour for Yoav. Because David thought he was better than what the Torah says. The Torah says, Lo tidrosh lamam. David thought he could do it. Right? And the end result was that was tragedy. Now, the Medrash doesn't finish the story. Because the end result was far more tragic than we can imagine. Because it came to be Zion. It ended up in war. And in that war, David fights in the first half of the war. In the second half of the war, David sends Yoav and his army to fight for him. David stays in Yerushalayim and sets his eyes on Bathsheba, and the rest is history. And so the sequence of events gets even more tragic, and it all spirals from this kind of misjudging of the cruelty of the relationship with Ammon. I'm going to pause for a minute. Phyllis had a question. If we have time, we'll do one more piece, but Phyllis had a question.
So I want to ask if any of our Mefarshim take Janet's approach, that David is being tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic, like he was good to me, I'm going to be good to him. And in fact, he does send them to be spies, as they're perceived to be.
I have not seen that. I don't think so. I just David doesn't read that way. And that's too much subterfuge. I mean, especially because if you look at the beginning of the perek, David's not speaking to anybody except to us. Vayomer David, who is he speaking to? Vayomer David, eser chesed im chanu menachash kasher asa avivi madi chesed. Who is he speaking to here? Doesn't say he's speaking to his delegation, he's speaking to his officer. He's speaking to us. It's the narrative. It's like David speaking to his heart, and we're hearing what he's saying. I don't think so. I think David misread the fact that when Hanun was kind to him, Hanun was kind, when Nachash was kind to him, Nachash was kind to him not because he had a good relationship with David, not because he liked David, not because he wanted to be friends with Israel. Nachash was kind to David because David was labeled at that moment an enemy of Shaul. The reality is now, it's years later, David is no longer an enemy of Shaul. David is now king of Israel. But in David's mind, he's still treating Nachash as a personal friend. He, in his moment of need, had a personal friend in the office of Nachash Melech Bnei Ammon. But this isn't a personal moment. This is a national moment. You're king of Israel.
But no matter what, whatever he does in all these things, his seed still continues.
Yeah, but that's not the subject. Yeah, it's true, but that's not the issue, right? You know, wipe out the entire household and tens of thousands of people die in battle and you have a promise that your seed will continue doesn't help us, right? We're not looking at it from that perspective. We're trying to understand what's going on. Let me show you one more piece, right? So I think it's important to note that David's behavior in the case of Nachash, is driven by this personal connection to Nachash on an individual, on a personal level. I mentioned at the beginning of the shiur that there's a parallel between the way he treats Nachash or Hanun ben Nachash and the way he treats Mephibosheth ben Yonatan. The whole parak starts by he achrechen. Look at the two stories in parallel. Here's David trying to be an ish chesed, a melech chesed, to Yonatan he owes a debt of chesed and he will repay it. To Nachash he owes a debt of chesed and he will repay it. But unfortunately for David, the emphasis in both these stories tells us the mistake David makes. In the case of Mephibosheth, he was acting as Melech, meaning as king of Israel, he owed a debt to the grandson of the previous king. And so lebeit Shaul, he turns. Vayomer Hamelech. Right? Everything in his relationship with Tziva is Hamelech, and he brings Tziva into his house, and suddenly he's David. To Tziva, he can be personal, but to Mephibosheth, it can be personal. But to Tziva, to the expression of kindness, it's very regal, it's very official. As Melech, he reaches out to the grandson of Shaul. Unfortunately, when David sends a delegation to Hanun ben Nachash, Vayomer David ese chesed im Hanun ben Nachash, Vayishlach David lenachamo biyad avadav. Seven references to David, the word Melech doesn't appear in any of them. Because his reach out to Hanun or to Nachash was personal. Oh, when I was personally running from Shaul's wrath and I was hiding in the hills as a friend, Nachash reached out to me and he gave me refuge and he gave me kindness. I owe him a debt. You owe him a debt as a personal favor, as a person, as David, but you are no longer David. You are Melech Yisrael. And as a king, you have to know who your enemies are and who your friends are, and you have to know who you're dealing with. And the moment your delegation arrives, they're perceived as not a delegation of David himself, they're perceived as spies of the king of Israel. Right? They're accused of being spies. And the end is a public humiliation on a national scale to which David cannot simply let that go without response. But the response has to be not as David, but as the king. Vayomer HaMelech, Shvu b'Yericho ad yitzapez kanchem v'shavta. And so that's the switch that David has to make. That's the mistake in the story.
Rabbi, it doesn't seem like David's consulting with anybody. For so much of Shmuel, you have David with the prophets and so on. And now he's like on his own.
Yeah, I suspect that that's true. And if he had consulted with the Navi, I'm quite confident the Navi would have said to him, don't do it. But unfortunately, he did not. And the rest, as they say, is the beginning of history. So we will stop here. And we will pick up next week, Bezrat Hashem, from the continuation of what happens to this delegation and what happens in the battle with Ammon, and all the events as they unfold from here.
Thanks, Rabbi.
My pleasure.
Wishing all of our friends in Israel and Canada a Chag Purim Sameach.
Thank you very much. We will reciprocate.
Bye-bye. Thank you.